840 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
News, I'm Jackie Quinn. The district attorney for New York says the gunman who shot and killed 10 black people in a spring will spend the rest of his life behind bars on a plea bargain in court.
The defendant intent to murder as many African Americans as he could, killed innocent black people.
Three family members in Southern California, police warn it highlights the danger of teens interacting with strangers on.
Police in Riverside, California say the suspect drove a. He was identified as 28-year-old Austin Lee Edwards.
Was portraying to be someone younger and probably different, and developed a relationship with her.
Edwards was a Virginia State Police trooper, recently hired as a sheriff's deputy. He took the teen, but in a shootout the same day as the homicide.
This is just a reminder of the dangers of online activity.
Girls not harmed. I'm Norman Hall.
President Biden's called on to implement the terms of a contract agreement to head off a next month. He says a walkout would be devastating for the economy and the supply chain. The State Department has abruptly postponed the start of arms talks this week. A meeting was set for Tuesday. Broadly on Wall Street as protests spread in China, calling the president to step down amid growing anger over COVID restrictions. The S&P 500 1.5%, the Dow Jones Industrial Average 2.4. A protester got onto the field at the World Cutter carrying a rainbow flag and a shirt that said Ukraine and respect for Iranian women.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world dreaming of a better life filled with dance. Brighter future with enough nutritious food to a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International, kids like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and life by ensuring that they have access to health care, education, life skills, and so much more. They can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International. Join us in our life-changing work at children.org. Hey, together, we can help end poverty for good.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Over the years, you've really kept up with the times. You're on social media.
Like, dislike, block.
Maintained your health.
10,000 steps. I'm a beast.
You even programmed your own smart home.
In 10 minutes, remind me that I'm a genius.
In 10 minutes, I'll remind you that you're a genius.
If you can do all that, you can definitely save for retirement. Just go to aceyourretirement.org, a free online tool sponsored by AARP that can help you get on track with your retirement savings no matter your age. At aceyourretirement.org, you'll meet Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach, and in just 3 minutes, get personalized recommendations to help boost your retirement savings. They're easy to understand and work with your lifestyle. It's quick, easy, and free. Plus, it's brought to you by AARP, so you know they got your back.
You are a genius.
Take charge of your retirement. Go to aceyourretirement.org now. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
This message is for Shauna, my mom, who just finished her high school diploma. I wanted to say I'm so proud of you for finishing school. You taught me it's never too late to achieve your dreams. I hope to make you as proud as you've made me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Telling my girls about my Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard.
But Mom's early detection gave us time to make a plan.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Mantner with your headlines. The Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled Friday to revoke the law license of former Milwaukee County Juvenile Court Judge Brett Blom, who's currently serving a 9-year sentence for distributing child pornography. His license was already suspended, but he filed a petition for the consensual revocation of his license. The state Supreme Court ruled that because of the seriousness of his misconduct while a judge, the revocation was merited. The State Department of Justice received a tip in February from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children that Blom uploaded child pornography 27 times in October and November of 2020. The criminal complaint says the DOJ began investigating him after getting that tip, Blom pleading guilty to 2 federal counts of distributing child pornography in September. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Cast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Another day, another BFD for the Biden administration. Yeah, today kind of a big deal. As the president unfurled his plan to help with the student loan debt crisis. $20,000 in debt forgiveness if you have a Pell Grant, $10,000 if you don't. Kind of a big deal. A lot of the economists, a lot of the smart people saying this is the right number to target the middle class, the working class. This is going to be helpful. For me, the interesting part, before we get into the nuts and bolts, the interesting part is the response from both sides. Because I said yesterday, nobody's going to be really happy because this isn't this doesn't meet anyone's perfect scenario. And you know how we are as a people. We want everything perfect and a neat little bag. And our media always is going to say, you know, it's great, but not everyone's happy. And understand, not everyone is ever happy. So this kind of a big deal. What I find interesting, so many people complaining about bailing out students. And this is the interesting part of this, because as I'm listening to these politicians and these pundits and even you know, friends who have something of a problem with it, I couldn't help but, you know, start doing that political word game. You know, let's take out one word and replace it with another. You know, so let's take student out and replace it with CEO in corporations. Because we don't seem to get as upset about bailing out corporate America because, well, we got to do that because it's going to, you know, whatever nonsense they spew. We don't seem to have a problem with bailing out the banks or corporate America or CEOs who make bad decisions or you know, companies that destroy the environment. We don't seem to care much about that. But, oh, boy, we help a student. We help someone next to us. Wow. And I had to listen to Marjorie Trainwreck, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Republican representative from Georgia, who, again, is on no committees, has lots of time on her hands to blather on. And she did. She blathered on about how this was the end of humanity and how, you know, this was Joe Biden buying votes. And my first thought is, well, isn't that what politics is about? Doing what the people want you to do? Do what is popular, what the majority of us, isn't that what this is kind of about? Isn't that the point of governing, ensuring that things get done, the things that we, the people, want? Yeah, that's it. That's it, Marjorie. That's reality. Maybe you should think about it. But, you know, she went on and on blathering on about it's going to increase in flesh. You know, all of the right-wing blathering points. Without bothering to mention the fact that she herself, Marjorie Trainwreck Greene, got a PPP loan of $180,000 that she doesn't have to pay back. And you go, but hold on, Marjorie, wait a second. Woo, let's back this train up. How is it that you get a $180,000 bailout, but someone who just wanted a little skin in the game, helping them is somehow horrible. It's somehow bad. It's going to cause inflation. It could do all these horrible things. How is that? And again, you listen to these hypocrites go on and on about how it's going to do all these horrible things. And yet, my favorite, you know, Marjorie Greene aside, my favorite, Rick Scott, the senator from Florida, he was doing some mad tweeting on a luxury yacht in Italy. Let's talk tone deaf. Let's talk stupid. Again, major disconnect, folks. Major disconnect in what's going on. And for me, this is a major moment for the working class, because this is another win. This is another win for working families. And you go, well, how is that possible? How is this a win for working families? Because we pay. We're finally helping people who need it. Understand, the cost of higher education, stop and think about this. From 1971 till now, the cost of higher education has quadrupled when compared to our wages. So there's this massive disconnect. Massive disconnect. And we know that the people who are saddled with these student loans are working people. This is why the right kind of losing their mind. Now, I got to tell you, I'm kind of surprised that it isn't louder. They didn't even get it trending on Twitter, but they did put up their talking points. This is going to cause inflation, because you know that generation of kids who can't buy a house, those people who can't buy a car, a new car, they got to get that crappy one. You know, that somehow, them being able to do those things, leading something of a life, bad. That's the amazing part here for me. Now, as I said, if you have a Pell Grant, it will be up to $20,000 that they will forgive in debt. If you don't have a Pell Grant, up to $10,000. They did means test it. I know Republicans love that. And look, I'm not against it either. If you are earning less than $125,000 a year, you are then eligible for the forgiveness. Above that, sorry, you're out of luck. Student loan pause extended for the final time through the end of the year. So everyone will have their student loans on pause through the end of the year, as we have been doing through the pandemic. That's going to be helpful to some. And the big part, you know, everyone's focused on the $20,000 if you had a Pell Grant and $10,000 if you don't. The big part of this is if you have loans for an undergraduate program, you can cap repayments at 5% of your monthly income. That is pretty massive, considering I know people who have, you know, I don't know, half of their income going to student loans. This is, again, to steal a Joe Bidenism, pretty big blanking deal. And a massive win, as I said. Now, for some 20 million students, their loans will be zeroed out. Another 23 million will get that $10,000 erased. Again, that is huge. And as I said, you know, you're going to lower the monthly payments, which is going to mean more money into the economy, more. And I know, but Rick, it's going to cause inflation. No, it's going to cause economic activity, and business can then thrive off of that. This is not a bad thing. No matter how much the right wing blathers and no matter how much they whine and complain, not a bad thing. Now, for those who say, well, I didn't go to college because it was too pricey. Well, you know, there are winners and losers in every program, and I'm one of those. I chose out of high school not to take on enormous debt. I chose to go get a union job and go back to school later in life. That was my choice. And I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem helping people in this moment. So pretty excited about this. Again, another victory by the administration, another step forward. I think a good thing. I really do. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at the Rick Smith Show.com. Going to take a quick break right here. When we come back, teacher strike going on in Columbus, Ohio. I got to get a couple of minutes to talk to them, find out what's going on, because this could be a big deal too, as there is talk, as I understand, of strike breaking by using cyber charter schools. This is a bad thing. Right back after this. If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to therickssmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at therickssmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. So let's talk about moving education in the wrong direction. I'm looking at the Springfield News Leader newspaper from Missouri. Evidently, the school board in Missouri there, we're making spanking great again. Yep, they're going to bring back spanking to school because that's going to make kids learn. Oh, boy, will it. Let's talk about every bad idea to make education worse that we see on the right. And then let's talk about the people who are trying to fight and make it better, which is why I'm not happy to see striking teachers out on the picket line. But the reason they're out there fighting the righteous fight, that's a good thing. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on out in Columbus, I've asked Regina Fuentes to come talk with us. She is a spokesperson for the Columbus Education Association, also a high school English teacher there in Columbus. Regina, thanks for taking time for us.
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
So let's talk about why are you guys out on the picket line? What's going on?
Well, we are feeling the pain of teachers across the nation. And, you know, it's about time that, you know, somebody stood up for the students in the United States and said something about these conditions in these buildings. You know, we have been asking our school district for years to address the dilapidated buildings and to do something about it. And we know that they have the funds available. They can do this work, but they just keep passing it off. So we're trying to have them put accountable language in our contract that actually has true timelines, true dates of when they are going to finish this work that they've promised our students so much. And they just keep holding back from actually doing these things. Also class sizes and making sure that we have music, PE, and art in elementary classes that for some reason they cut.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me when you start when you hear these stories of cutting all of these programs in these classes that many people my age took for granted going through school. And when you tell people that this stuff has been just eviscerated in public education because of a number of reasons, charter schools and privatization and all of these schemes that they've come up with and just gutting education funding, as we had done a couple of times here in this state of Pennsylvania, people are kind of shocked. So it takes something kind of shocking, like going out on the picket line, because this isn't something you guys do often. In fact, I was looking it up. The last time there was any, I guess it's the first time since 1975 that your union has gone on strike?
That is correct, 1975. And this isn't a decision that came, you know, lightly. We did everything we possibly could to avoid going to a strike, but the district abruptly walked out on negotiations twice and would not complete the negotiation process. And it just speaks volumes to, you know, they put out there that kids come first and they care about their teachers, they care about their schools, but their actions are saying that it's not true. And we are just trying to finally get something done and use this opportunity to really, you know, pinpoint and get something done for our students who deserve so much better.
Yeah, you know, we're in a moment, Regina, and this is one of those things where you go, there's so many attacks going on against teachers, and there's so much nonsense being thrown at you guys that I don't know why anyone does it anymore. And good, thank you for doing it. But you know, in this moment, I'm sure that some of the loudest opponents are attacking you guys. What kind of response are you getting from people in your community?
The community actually has been amazing. We have had tremendous support from our parents, from our students. They see the gaslighting happening. I mean, when we tell them these specifically are the things we're asking for, and the district comes back and says, well, we just don't know what they're asking for. I mean, come on, what are you doing? You are not valuing the intelligence of our parents. You are not valuing the people who voted to put you in that position, and you're not valuing what the public wants. You weren't put into that position to do your will. You were put into that position to do the will of the people. And the will of the people wants you to listen to the teachers, listen to your students, and get these schools fixed.
Yeah, you know, I've talked to teachers who have been on strike in the past, and I've never found one who's happy to be there. But they know why they're on strike. They know what they're fighting for. And interestingly enough, it's rarely about their own personal wealth. It's rarely about their own. It's rarely about themselves. It's always, it seems, about making conditions better for the students, you know, while simultaneously making their conditions better. Because after all, you know, your working conditions are your students' learning conditions. So as parents, yes. I know I want the best conditions for you and for my children. So it's really just bizarre and strange to me that you're in this position.
It is. And, you know, I've been beating that drum, you know, for a while. I just don't understand why it is that public education or education in general is not the most important investment in the nation. I mean, our students don't stay young and students for their entire life. They become the voters of tomorrow. They become the citizens of tomorrow, the workers. You know, why aren't we trying to ingrain in them the very best and treat them with the very best so that our communities thrive, our nation thrives? Yeah. No, it's always the bottom of the list. And, you know, I think that this is just going to be the beginning of a movement of teachers and workers, actually laboring workers who are just tired of, you know, being stepped on and ignored, essentially, when it comes down to our working conditions.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Regina Fuentes. She's the spokesperson for the Columbus Education Association. If you want to check out their website, ceaohio.org is that website. You can take a look at it. You guys are, as I understand, raising some funding. A GoFundMe page out there was looking to raise $5,000. You're up over $60,000 now on that page. And I hope folks will go and donate to help get you through this, because the district is doing something, as I understand, and you can help me if I'm wrong here, but it was reported to me yesterday that the district has cut off your health insurance in one of the most union-busting things possible, which tells me that they really don't want to settle this. They really don't want to have you come to the table. They want this adversarial fight.
Yes, and it makes absolutely no sense. I mean, these are elected officials. They weren't elected to be doing, you know, these things that they are doing. They don't really care about teachers. They don't really care about the students if everything is punitive. And we're just trying to get a contract that is, you know, fair, and it's not unlike any other process we've ever gone through before. And, you know, we want the best for our students. And we know what's best for our students because we're there. We're on the front lines. These district officials, they don't ever come into our classrooms to do what we do. So why even question it? who knows best what's best for our students? We do.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to get. And I think it would be a value to them to hold themselves accountable the way they push our students to hold themselves accountable and the way that they push us to hold ourselves accountable.
Yeah, one of my favorite bumper stickers is, if you can read this, thank a teacher. It's one of my favorite ones. But, you know, here's the thing, and I got to wonder, you yourself, I'm sure this isn't where you want to be today. I'm sure this isn't what you want to be fighting for. And I can't imagine there is anyone who is. But ultimately, you know, and I've said this a number of times over the years, I think teachers are one of the most abused professions in the country. Wage theft in the education industry, if you will, is rampant because you guys are forced to work so many hours that you're not compensated for. And a lot of the times you're digging into your own pockets for supplies that you don't have because you need them. This just seems to be one of those moments where we should be talking about all of this stuff, not just narrow right. things that the district keeps pushing out.
That's right. And I think, you know, the district is trying to dampen that message and put it out. But we have lit the flame. I mean, honestly, this is something that's going to be explosive, I think, across the nation. It's already happening. You know, teachers are burning out. Students are burning out. And, you know, it has nothing to do with the curriculum and what we're doing. And it has everything to do with our conditions and the way that, you know, the leadership and these districts want to micromanage teachers, you know, over plan and try and, you know, we're professionals. We have years of college education, but they treat us as if they have to tell us what to do. And it's just so insulting,
yeah.
you know, to, you know, for teachers to have to be micromanaged.
Well, I've argued they're trying to make it like factory work so that they mm-hmm. don't have to have professionals doing it. And you could do what they're doing in Florida. Just, hey, as long as you're taking a couple of courses, yeah, you can be a teacher. What the heck? That's a problem for me because, you know, I've seen some of their writings and it's scary stuff. The other yes. thing that I saw, and maybe you can help clear up, one of the concerns that I have is there's talk of potential strike breaking, union busting going on yes. by using virtual, going back to the cyber stuff. Is that happening? Is that going to happen? You know, is there any information you can give me on that?
Well, they did virtual learning to open school today, and it was an absolute disaster. you know, this has been
for the last 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. The reason we went to virtual teaching last year for part of, you know, the school year was because we were in a pandemic. It was a health issue. There is no health issue right now. There is no reason why they should be in virtual teaching. If they truly have the professional subs that they say they have and they have the ability to open school, then they should actually be opening brick and mortar schools and teaching those kids in the classroom. But the truth is that it's just a farce. It's a lie. They don't. There is no substitute for great teachers. And the great teachers that the parents want in the classroom is us.
Yeah.
It's not these individuals that they just, you know.
I'm grateful for all the teachers that my kids have had over the years. Because I know I can't do it. I have a hard enough time with my three keeping them in line. I can't imagine a class of 20, 30. I've even seen in some places 50 kids in a classroom, which is
That's
just
right.
insane. So, you know, lastly, leave us with something positive, because I looked at someone like you who hasn't left teaching. And I know this is a labor of love for so many. You know, why do you do it?
Because it's always new. And these kids teach me as much as I feel like I teach them. And, you know, I have so many stories of students who, you know, didn't believe in themselves or didn't think they could get through something. And that light bulb comes on. And every single time I've seen it more than, you know, probably 100 times in my career. And it never gets old. You know, I laugh every day. I sometimes cry with my students. It's all about the relationships. And that's what I really love is that, you know, it's an opportunity to really reach young people and have an effect on someone's life that, you know, is everlasting. And that's what keeps me in the classroom.
Good on you, Regina. I wish you guys the best. I hope you'll come back and keep us up to date on what's going on. Keep up the fight. One day longer, one day stronger. Regina Fuentes, I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Make sure you check out the website, CEAOhio.org.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
Coronavirus, Jackie Quinn with an AP News Minute. Several more states from COVID hotspots, according to the Mayo Clinic, which adds Michigan and Rhode Island to the list of states with more than 20. Remains the highest. China's strategy of controlling the virus with lockdowns and quarantines has provoked a show of public dissent in decades. In the U.S., National Security Council's John Kirby says the White House will not impose lockdowns.
We've come a long way. Three years, in terms of COVID and preventing COVID. So we've said lockdown is not a policy that we support.
Economists say there were normal activities in the U.S. could put a dent in Cyber Day. There was a 3% increase in the number of people in stores. That could reduce online shopping by about 4 million people compared to last year. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a bright with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, poverty, and do incredible things. Hey, thanks to Children International and much more, so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work. Children.org today. Together, we can end poverty for good.
My husband said to give our house more curb appeal, so I started painting. Then I went on Google and looked up the meaning of curb appeal. It said to make it more nicer. So I called Replacement Window Center, and they put in new replacement windows.
Get free installation and 0% financing for 18 months. Free installation and 0% financing. Hurry, call now.
Replacement Window Center. Our name says it all.
The Devil's Advocates.
Hey, Jenny.
It's up to all of us. It's not just up to Democrats. Are we ready to rid our country of this perversion and deception? You know, are we sick of massacres at churches, grocery stores, theaters, concerts? Are we sick of adults forcing children who are raped into pregnancy? When is enough enough that we're going to vote all those fascists?
I'm putting you down for Caller Hall of Fame today. We have to carry these messages. Even if the Democratic Party is incapable, you keep it up, sister.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. The case of a Milwaukee elections official who asked for false military absentee ballots is raising questions if Wisconsin should change the way it makes people on active duty ask for absentee ballots online. The Wisconsin Elections Commission is talking about requiring military voters to use their common access card to verify who they are. The Wisconsin Elections Commission meets this week to certify the November 8th vote. Local election officials finished their count last week. Once the ballots are certified Wednesday morning, we'll have an official number for voter turnout. In sports, Philadelphia beat the Packers last night, the Bucks beat Dallas, and Luke Fickell is introduced today as the Badgers' new football coach. Coverage at 4 on the Devil's Advocates. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
HR saying, if that won't make you cry, nothing will.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show.
Well,
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I gotta say, today, another BFD, another big freaking day. Another massive win. And then look, you know, as I've said before, Biden wasn't my first choice. Was not my first choice. But for a guy that doesn't say much, getting a lot done. We went through 4 years of guy who did nothing but talk, got nothing done. We've got a guy now who doesn't talk at all, just getting stuff done. And this while I'm sure not everybody happy, it's going to make a lot of people happy, and it's going to help our economy, I think. And here to share some thoughts on today's announcement on the debt forgiveness, I've asked Jesse O'Connell to come talk with us. He's a senior vice president of education policy there at the Center for American Progress. You want to check out their website, AmericanProgress.org. Jesse, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, my pleasure, man. This is a really exciting thing to be talking about.
No, this is huge. So give me the basics. $20,000 for people who took out a Pell Grant, $10,000 if you didn't. Explain that. Why that matters.
Yeah, and I think the other important detail to note is, you know, sort of targeting at this at middle class and working families, right? People making less than $125,000 a year, $250,000 as a couple. And, you know, that relief is still going to reach 95% of student loan borrowers. I think they really sort of did a very savvy job threading the needle here of getting the relief to people that need it, sort of recognizing that this was a action that kind of is in response to how our system of college has gotten unaffordable. But, you know, those top line forgiveness numbers, Rick, are what have been getting a lot of attention. But this was really a more comprehensive package than that, right? They continued the pause on student loans through the end of the year, recognizing that no one's ready for that system to be turned back on. And even bigger than that, you know, this repayment plan that they announced that's going to limit payments to 5% of income and sort of cut the time to forgiveness to 10 years, that's going to dramatically drop payments for most people. Savings of, you know, over $1,000 a year for many borrowers. So ultimately, we're talking about an action today that is reaching 43 million Americans. 20 million of those 43 are going to see their debts totally wiped down to zero. You know, I think in the lead up to this, when people were trying to anticipate what we'd learn, I think this exceeded that scope. Like this really, really is a big deal.
So let's take on the arguments from the right first, because, you know, you had Marjorie Taylor Greene going on this rambling. It's inflation. It's, you know, it's rewarding, you know, people who made bad decisions, even though she herself took $180,000 in PPP money that she didn't have to pay back. So didn't mind bailing her out, but someone else, well, that's a problem. What do you say to the people who say, look, you know, you're just bailing out people who knew what they were doing, Jesse? They took these loans out. They should have to pay them back because, well, most of the time, unless you've gotten debt forgiveness from the federal government on other things, you're a CEO, your corporation, you have to pay them back. What do you say to that?
So I think it shows that people are looking at our system of higher education through the wrong lens, right? That it's sort of about choice and that this is something that people decided to do and they're going back on a commitment that they made. You know, for basically a generation now, we have leaned on student loans to paper over these tremendous gaps in how we ensure that college is affordable for people. You know, it used to be that on about 6 weeks of minimum wage work, you could pay for a semester of tuition, right? That's sort of why we see a lot of lawmakers and policymakers today reflecting on, oh, I worked my way through college. Why can't students today work their way through college? And the simple answer is we stopped making that public investment in our higher education system. So the Pell Grant, which, you know, sort of a lot of people are hearing about today because of its role in determining eligibility, you know, for the greater amount of loan forgiveness, the Pell Grant used to cover 70% of the cost of college. And today it only covers about 30%. So this notion that students, you know, sort of made a choice that they're going back on, we tell people that you need to pursue education after high school, to get a credential, to participate in the economy, to have the kind of economic opportunity and success that people want to have. And then we sort of hand them the bill and say, you know, we told you to do this. We told you this was the right choice. We told you this is going to pay off. And people listen to us. So I see a lot of this as kind of delivering on the implicit promise that this is the right thing to do and that our economy needs people to be pursuing these credentials that lead to good, fulfilling careers.
So how does this fix the overall problem, which is college is way too unaffordable? The tuition rates have gone through the roof. I mean, even when I went to college back in the 80s, tuition was, you know, it was a lot more affordable than it is now. Now, how do we fix that situation to where, You can go back to 6 weeks of minimum wage work being able to pay for a semester. How do we, does this do that? Or is that something that has to be done down the road? Because look, I'm all in favor of debt forgiveness. I'm in favor of, you know, going, you say, okay, let's buy up all those loans and do something with them. But if we're only picking this generation as winners, what about the next group of kids who are going to have to do the same thing? Have we fixed that situation that got us into this situation?
Yeah, Rick, I think it's the right question to be asking. I think what we can say about today's action is that it was an important first step to get there, right? If we think about the forgiveness portion of it itself, I think that is a response to this extraordinary period that we've been through, right? You know, we had graduates who, starting with the Great Recession, have just sort of, you know, made the right choices and continually not been able to get up off the mat as things have happened that have prevented that college degree from having the return that they thought it would. So I think the forgiveness action is sort of recognizing the different ways that these policies have come up short recently. But forward looking, you know, I think buried towards the bottom of this announcement was, you know, sort of this commitment to actually look at the schools that are producing some of the worst outcomes, that are producing some of the highest levels of debt without giving students the kind of education and the experience that they expect, and to sort of name names and actually really get that information out there in a way that hopefully we'll start to see some changes in institutional behavior. And you know, I think beyond that, we didn't see stuff that was, you know, done today through this action, but this administration has put forth a bunch of ideas previously about ways to make community college free, to invest in HBCUs and MSIs, and sort of put our investments in the types of places that we know are lifting people into a different situation from generation to generation, which I think is what we want to see, right? We want to meet our students where they are going today.
Yeah, but you know, there's also this thought, and this keeps coming up, that especially on the right, going, well, not everyone should go to college. Not everyone is college material. They should be doing other things. You know, what do you say to that? Because, look, I wasn't ready for college at 18. I wasn't ready, you know, at 19. In fact, you know, my first year was wasted on me. It wasn't until I got to be a little bit older, a little bit more mature, that I then was able to get something out of it. What do you say to those people who say not everyone should go? There should be other paths, other tracks. But because, look, you know, I know so many people who go, the only path to the middle class is to get this piece of paper. Need the golden ticket to get into the middle class, even though it's not the bang for the buck it used to be. What's the response to that?
Yeah, I think the response is that college is a tricky word and it means different things to different people, right? So I think when you hear the criticisms that you just laid out, they're using college to stand in for that kind of traditional conception of a four-year residential experience that, you know, you go away from home, you live in a dorm. But college, really, what we're talking about here is sort of all of the different pathways that you can follow after high school to get credentialed skills that are going to lead to good jobs, right? 37% of today's students are older than 25. 64% of them work part-time. And the thing that always blows people's mind is if we look at people in higher education today, only 13% of them live in that residential experience, right? So most of these students that we're talking about, they're older, they have responsibilities outside the classroom, and they really are pursuing credentials that, you know, let them work as an early childhood educator or as a home health aide or in, you know, jobs like trucking require skills that are credentialed. All of these things come with costs, and people have taken out student loans for all of these credential pathways. So I think it's easy to fall in the trap of saying that we are talking about, you know, people with high balances that, you know, did kind of these liberal arts degrees. And it's not really the case. We're helping today a lot of people that attempted college and didn't complete and are being held back by their balances, you know, pursued workforce-oriented credentials that didn't cost a lot of money but haven't come in the way that people thought. So I think we need to break out of sort of the word college, meaning what the New York Times wants it to make, and not what actual working class people are looking for to improve their lives and to improve their economic situation.
Yeah, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Jesse O'Connell. He's the Senior Vice President of Education Policy there at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org is their website. We're talking about today's big freaking deal, President Biden's announcement that they're going to forgive up to $20,000 of debt forgiveness for student loans with people with Pell Grants, up to $10,000 if you didn't have a Pell Grant. But the big one, the big part, capping your repayment at 5% of your salary, which I think is huge. Now, you know, there's some other arguments that I get. You know, what about the left's arguments? I get a lot of people on the left going, well, I didn't get to go to college. What's in it for me? We've become kind of a selfish society, haven't we?
You know, it's tough, Rick. And I view this as this is what government should be doing, right? Like, government should be stepping in when we expect things of people, but there's market failures. I think there's a huge role to play here in acknowledging that there's lots of people in different public service roles, and we want them in those roles, but they're never going to be the highest paying jobs, and this is a way to support them. You know, I think hidden behind this announcement, because it's been happening on an ongoing basis, this administration has forgiven $35 billion across different existing forgiveness programs. They finally made public service loan forgiveness work. They've forgiven loans for 175,000 public service workers. They finally got around to making the borrower defense to repayment rules work, which says if you're defrauded by your institution, we'll forgive your loans. All of this is having the aggregate effect of this being an administration that is taking seriously the promises of what our higher education system has said all along. And we're really starting to see a lot of that come in.
Now, I would like to see the administration, I'd like to see the Department of Education go after some of these predatory colleges, that these fly-by-night places, basically diploma mills online. And that, you know, I've known people that have taken these programs, they spend lots of money and nothing. I mean, the degrees are worthless. The education isn't to the same standards. I think we really have to evaluate where a lot of this money is being spent as well. Do you agree?
I couldn't agree more. And in fact, just last week, the Department of Ed fired an accreditor, right? This accreditor, ACICS, was the accreditor that let ITT operate, it let Corinthian College operate. And finally, we saw action to say that they no longer could be a guardian of all of these billions of dollars of federal student financial aid flowing to these institutions that were essentially enrolling students under, you know, sort of false pretenses and not educating them in the way that they thought they were. So I expect that we'll see more of this. You know, there's been some rulemakings underway to be really rigorous about the outcomes that that these institutions need to provide.
Let's talk about the politics of this. How do you think this is going to play? You've got, again, Marjorie Traitor Greene and a bunch of the Republicans screaming that this is Joe Biden just trying to buy votes. He just wants to buy votes. And I would argue, you know, I can throw my two cents in here, that's what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be doing what the people want. They're supposed to be doing what's popular. And yeah, if it helps them get votes, that's kind of how the system's supposed to work, isn't it?
You know, I think it's even simpler than that. I think people like seeing government work for people. I think people like seeing government do things, right? And even if you want to quibble on the merits and say, oh, I would have done it slightly differently, or I would have done it this way, what matters is they're making progress. They're taking problems seriously. They're trying to solve them. You know, like I said, we're likely to see 20 million people see their student loan balance go to zero. That is a lot of people who are going to wake up and have a different emotional state, a different financial state. And those people are in their communities. They're going to talk about, hey, look, government stood up for me. They delivered on something that I had hoped for, that I had expected. And I think in some ways that transcends politics, right? Like, that's ultimately this notion of coming together around a sense of commonwealth to actually do good in people's lives.
Now, yeah, this is a big deal. But what do you say to the person, Jesse, who goes, well, by doing that, by forgiving these 20,000 people's debts, they're now going to go into the economy. They're going to spend that money frivolously and wrongly and going to cause inflation and going to make my life worse, which is what the argument that I'm getting most often, that this is going to cause massive inflation and we're going to all suffer because of this.
Well, listen, I'm not an economist, but I'm pretty confident that inflationary lens is not the way to think of this. Student loans have been turned off since the start of the pandemic. So money that would be going to student loan payments has not been going to student loan payments at any point over the past couple of years. So it's not like that is going to change. Ultimately, we're talking about the impact on wealth, right? I think this is going to sort of close gaps that we've seen between different groups in terms of their ability to accumulate wealth. I think this is going to let people start to make plans for the future in terms of saving for retirement, thinking about buying a home. And really, I think in the sort of run of how we measure these things, we're going to see people who are doing better, who are feeling better, who are more engaged in their community. And I think that's the conversation that we need to be having.
Yeah, good stuff. Now, there's no way to undo this, right? This is going to be done. This is kind of a done deal then?
That's probably the trickiest thing to say here. I think what's really apparent is this administration thought about this really hard. They worked on it for a long time. They were really thorough. They looked at all the angles. I think they are as confident as they can be that they are doing this based on, you know, sort of underlying statutory authority. I think predicting the future is a tricky thing, but, you know, I'm pretty confident that this is change that's going to make an immediate impact in people's lives and last.
Good stuff. Jesse, I appreciate the time, the thoughts, the input. Good stuff. Good day, right?
Yeah, big day. Really good day.
Good day. Appreciate it. Jesse O'Connell, Senior Vice President of Education Policy there at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org is where you can check out the work that he does there. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk. You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1970. That was the day that the United Farm Workers went out on strike against California lettuce growers. The United Farm Workers had led a successful boycott against grape growers that had drawn national attention to the harsh working conditions and low pay of those who harvested our nation's food. In an effort to keep the United Farm Workers from organizing lettuce workers, some of the growers had signed contracts with the Teamsters Union. The United Farm Workers argued that these contracts did not represent the workers' best interests. As thousands of workers went on strike, Cesar Chavez called for a national boycott of all non-union lettuce. In the lead-up to the strike, an estimated 4,000 workers attended a meeting in Salinas, California. One worker, Antonio Segredo, explained the importance of the action. Rael Macaredo, voice of the Farm Worker newsletter, reported his words, quote, "Let the people and the government of the United States know that we are ready to work, but that we must have what we ask. It isn't very much. We don't ask the impossible, only that they look upon us as human beings. We have the same ambitions that they do. We have families. We have rights. Why must they continue to treat us like beasts of burden and look for a thousand ways to bring us down?" That December, Cesar Chavez was jailed for leading the boycott. Putting pressure on the growers through encouraging the public to boycott non-union harvested food was a key tactic for the farm worker movement. It impacted the bottom line of the growers and moved them to sit down at the bargaining table.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I love this story, especially when you're looking at the backdrop of the student loan forgiveness. Because, again, Ron Johnson, one of the guys against the administration doing this, he was attempting to justify, defend his wealth doubling during his term in office and you know, his participation in, you know, slipping a little language into Trump's only legislative victory, which was a massive handout to rich people like Ron Johnson, trying to defend that, which I don't know how you do. But he said that, those people out there, those people in the media, those moneyed people, they're playing class envy. And this is one of those things I find very interesting. When the wealth class plays the class war card and then tries to be the victim. Understand, he's in a position to make his wealth double during his tenure. He's in a position to insert things into legislation to make himself and people like him better off. But yet, when the Oshkosh company in Wisconsin said, "No, we're not going to make our vehicles that we got the contract from the federal government here in Wisconsin. We're going to go to non-union South Carolina. And we're going to do some good old-fashioned union busting, and we're going to take those jobs down there." He said, "Well, we've got enough jobs here in Wisconsin." Which, you know, this is one of those weird moments. Because in any other moment in my lifetime, if a politician were to say, "Yeah, my state's got enough. My state has more than enough jobs, good paying jobs with health care benefits and retirement security and a living wage and safe working. We've got enough of those." That would be a career ender. And I look at the 4 years of the former guy. He had like 100 scandals and incidents where those would be career enders for anybody, any other administration. It would be the end for them. But no. Because they're masters at playing the victim card. They really are. You got to give them credit on a certain level. You know, poor me, multimillionaire. Poor me, my wealth doubled. And you're just playing class war, just class envy. Yeah. When a generation of kids, they're saddled with massive student loan debt so that you can be wealthier, there's a problem there. When we're talking about education systems, K through 12, where teachers are being cheated out of wages and their standard of living is worse off, and we don't have, you know, music and art and gym and librarians and nurses. But yet, hey, we doubled the wealth of the wealth class. Our roads, our bridges, you stop and you think of all the things that we could be investing the kind of money that we've given away in massive tax breaks to the wealthy and corporations, and the sacrifices that the working class has made to make that, to earn that wealth for them, only to have it, well, squandered. I know, the rich people are the smart ones. They know what to do with the money, and you're right, they do. Make themselves more money. It's what they do. And heaven forbid working people say, you know what, we demand better. And I looked at this story in just here in my backyard. In Harrisburg, there's a pizza chain. They have a couple of pizza shops locally where the workers said, hey, we want to unionize. They marched on the boss and said, here's our petition. We have a majority of support. How about we work together? How about we sit down, we work out a contract, we work out some working conditions, we make things better here. Because can you imagine, I mean, we're talking about a small, I think 11 or 12 people work there. Small organization. Can you imagine how bad the conditions must be for those workers to go, you know what? We're demanding that you, the boss, respect us. And in good, in predictable fashion, the Need Pizza folks, KNEAD, Need Pizza folks, announced on social media that they were closing their doors. You're not going to make us have unionized workers. Oh, no, no, no. So instead of sitting down and talking with their employees, instead of negotiating in good faith with their employees, they closed the door. And I came out with the reality is what should happen. No one should ever go to a pizza shop opened by these people ever again. And this is one of those things that should be remembered. Because remember, these are the workers who are the frontline heroes. These are the people who showed up to work. These are the people who sacrificed. And yet the owners, well, we're just going to close the door. It's our right to close the door. And it is. It is their right on a certain level to do that. I kind of hope they decide that they're going to open up under a different name in the same location. So legally they get taken to the cleaners. But that's a whole other argument for another day. This is the kind of stuff that's going on. The wealth class of this country and the people who run these companies. Now, this is a very small example. But you look what Starbucks is doing. They're closing places, too. You look at what Walmart has done. They've closed stores. They've closed entire stores because a handful of auto repair folks unionized. Or butchers decided they wanted to unionize. The powered elite are never going to give up control. The moneyed elite are never going to share. Never voluntarily. Nothing is ever given. Sorry, this idea of the benevolent employer, the benevolent wealth class, that doesn't exist. Because when times get tough, they seem to get tough on the people on the bottom. And this is why I've said a million times, every worker should have a union in their workplace. Every worker should sit down and be able to collectively bargain with their employer to ensure the best wages, hours, conditions possible. And the best respect possible. But we have a system currently that is broken. And this is why it's important to have an administration like the Biden administration who is friendly to working people, who is fighting the fights for working people. Because you stop and think about it. The Rescue Act that helped families get through the pandemic, and all of the investments in communities that went to help communities. You stop and you think about the infrastructure bill that's going to be rebuilding infrastructure and creating jobs. You think about the PACT Act that's going to help veterans. You think about this Inflation Reduction Act that's going to create jobs and help get people with get insurance and lower the cost of prescription drugs. We're talking about, and now this student loan thing, this is really focusing on helping the working class of this country like no other administration in my lifetime. This is one of those moments where the working people of this country should be rallying around this administration. And yet you got half of them who have this.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.